This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
This episode of Beyond is brought to you by Audible. Visit audiblepodcast.com/podcastbeyond for your free audiobook download.
Users lose all sense of reality and enter another world. Remember, do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 283. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the pride of Long Island, Colin Moriarty.
Hello.
The Dark Knight of News, Andrew Goldfarb.
Good morning.
And the ghosts of everyone ever. No Colin today. We ain't got time. But we do have a great interview with David Reed.
We don't have time,
call
Colin.
Call in.
I was going to say, I can go?
We got to go. We got to keep going. You can go. Right. You've been dismissed.
Do you remember when we were going to... When you and Colin Campbell used to talk about doing a show called Call In with Colin and Colin?
That would have been great.
A great show. It's Monday. We're recording early. On Tuesday, when this posts, I'll be playing SimCity for 9 hours straight.
Wow.
That's fun.
It's pretty much my dream day.
Yeah.
Day at IGN. Just play games. Don't do anything. Beyond
camera. Is Damon with you the whole time?
No. Damon's with me from like 9 to 11.
That's a sizable chunk, though.
Yeah. And then from the rest of it, it'll just be me playing. You can tune
you
in
think
and watch play.
He's going to be mad that there's no city named after him?
Well, maybe there will be tomorrow.
Oh, a little tease to get people interested. Yeah,
I'm also putting up a new commentary about SimCity every day at 12:30. Wow. Eventually, Andrew Goldfarb makes an appearance.
Yeah, that's
so you
true.
Should watch. It's only like 20 days from now. You'll see him. But let's begin the show, not with this PC garbage, but with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. I have a hot coffee.
Oh, you do? A photo bucket mug.
Yeah, I left my real mug downstairs. I haven't been in my desk in like 5 hours.
Yeah, I know.
There are 10 items on the list.
Since
Greg will incessantly not stop bitching about the Roper Report, let's play a game of
I doubt it and I guarantee it.
Can I have a pen, please?
I don't even want to do it today because I bet it's all good. I already saw your top three. Those are Dynamite.
Okay.
Dynamite mega franchises.
Number one.
Mega franchises, Colin.
Number one. Beyond Two Souls finally has a release date. This PlayStation 3 exclusive from Quantic Dream, the studio that brought you Heavy Rain, is due out on October 8th in North America. There's no word yet on its release date in other territories.
We talked about this for a PlayStation conversation. I have a theory, Goldfarb, that October 8th is getting it out ahead of PlayStation 4. Then we get PlayStation 4... End of October, beginning of November. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I watched your PlayStation conversation. I agree. I thought that was Colin's theory, though. Wasn't that a Moriarty joint?
What was my theory then? Hey, this is the release date, and I have nothing to say about it.
That does sound like you.
Colin's SimCity. Colin's talking to SimCity.
I'll take some credit for some of that work.
Hey, guess what I invented? you enjoying these PlayStation conversations? I, Greg Miller, invented them.
Motherfuckers.
I think that's a... I think it's a solid theory, regardless of its source. I think, to me, November is the most likely. I think I'm expecting what, like I think a lot of people are, for Microsoft to launch first, and I would expect Sony to launch in November.
Mm. That's scary. That's bad news of that.
But we'll see.
We will see.
Number two. Assassin's Creed 4 is real. It's called Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, not to be confused with the punk band. And we'll launch on October
20th. Or the Roach spray, right?
It's true. And we'll launch on October 29, 2013 for both PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4, as well as other platforms. But the PS4, I guess, date is kind of nebulous.
Yes.
And there's a lot more information about AC4 right now on IGN, so you can go check it out now.
We don't normally...
Because you goddamn know I don't give a shit.
I mean, we don't normally get into inside baseball stuff This was interesting. This was an interesting
one of
reveal.
The worst handled reveals.
Yeah,
I like it, we don't get inside baseball. It's a conversational podcast. We talk about the industry a lot on
that's
it.
True. That's true.
Podcast Beyond every Tuesday on IGN. We talk about this kind of stuff a lot.
I mean,
go ahead and lay it out what happened here.
So
Rich, everybody saw this game.
Yeah, me and Rich and Mitch saw this game a little over a week ago, I think it was. What was that? What was that look for?
Your excellent grammar skills.
Rich
me,
and Mitch.
Rich and Mitch. Charlatan.
Rich, Mitch, and I.
There you go. So I'm terrible, obviously.
About a week ago, and originally everything was going to hit today. Then there was a poster leaked from GameStop, and then they released the box art, and then the embargo changed, and everything got shuffled around. But today we can finally talk about it.
Hey!
I mean, my favorite thing, I've been pretty vocal about not being completely crazy about AC3, despite being excited for it. But this one, I think, could do it. Like, I mean, I don't know. If they do anything right, it's the character reveals. You know, like, I think it's really cool seeing the new assassin. I think there are some cool things they're trying here. I like the idea of the new modern setting being, like, they hinted that it's going to be first person. They said it's you're no longer playing as Desmond. You're no longer playing as an ancestor of these people. The idea now is that Abstergo can access anyone's past as long as they have their DNA. So the idea is you're a research assistant who is researching the Kenway family, and that's why you're jumping back into Edward.
So it's kind of like, and I'm not making a joke, Assassin's Creed Liberation, where I wasn't related to her. It was just like the portable version of the Animus I could jump in.
That's exactly what it is. It's that is the new model, basically. I mean, it sounds like they fleshed it out more than they did in Liberation, but yeah, like the idea is Abstergo has a branch called Abstergo Entertainment, and the idea is that you can buy use of the Animus. Like, you can buy time of jumping into the past as long as you have their DNA. Okay. And Abstergo has, like, people's DNA on record, presumably.
Interesting. What did you talk, I still have not been to my desk. Like I said, I haven't read about it. I don't know much about it. What do you mean first person? Is the whole game first person?
No. The stuff in the past is like it always is. It's very Assassin's Creed. Well, I mean, I'll get to that in a second. But perspective-wise, it's like it always is. But it sounds like, and they haven't 100% confirmed this, it sounds like the modern-day stuff is in first person.
Interesting.
Because the idea is, instead of Desmond, it's you.
It's me!
You play as the new research assistant who's going back in time.
I've always wanted to be a research assistant.
Yeah, it's a pretty great job. in another life, Colin. But
see
yeah,
in another life, brother.
The stuff in the past is kind of interesting. I mean, Mitch keeps comparing it to Far Cry. It's set before Assassin's Creed 3. You're in, like, the 1715 era, I believe, playing as the grandfather of Connor. Okay. So you're the father of Haytham, grandfather of Connor. And the idea is that they're going to follow this the Kenway saga now. So the way before you had a trilogy focusing on Ezio,
yeah,
sounds like now we're going to get a third part to this saga, which will continue to focus on the Kenways.
I see. Colin, do you
He's
care at all?
He's falling asleep. Colin's dead.
Do you care at all?
No.
We talked about it before. You never liked the gameplay of any Assassin's Creed games. You did the respectable thing. Toughed them out. You platinum Assassin's Creed 2. Did you play some of Brotherhood? I forget. Getting
no,
ready for
I didn't
3.
Play any of those.
Okay.
No.
But then you started playing 3. You're a big American history guy. It didn't work for you?
No.
Did you finish it?
No. Can't do that.
You finish it?
Yeah, I finished it. I didn't do anything. I didn't try the multiplayer. I didn't, like, try many of the optional missions. But yeah, I finished it.
I can't go any further.
What do you think?
I didn't like it. I mean, it's not... The problem for me was that I just didn't like Connor, I think is my biggest issue with that game. Like, I also don't like how much control they took away from you. Like, right. I mean, you're doing... Like, one thing that was cool in Assassin's Creed 1 and I think 2 also is that you have more of these open-ended assassinations, right? You go into a city and they're like, okay, this is your guy. However you want to get to him, go for it. Whereas in AC3, that wasn't really the case. In AC3, it gave you a very specific route to follow. You had to get to that person, and you finally did, and then they got killed in a cutscene or a quick time event. And so, like, you never felt like you were in control of what was going on in the way you used to be. It's also just really repetitive. I don't know. It bummed me out. The ship battles were a nice change of pace, though. I think even you would agree.
Yeah, I like those. I was hoping the game would be based around those.
Yeah, well, and it seems like now... So what they said to us is it's about a 60-40 split of 60% land, 40% like naval. And they also said that... The naval stuff in AC3 was like putting your toe in the water. That's significantly deeper of a system than that. You can, in the middle of a battle, you can throw out a rope and board another ship and take over that way.
That's cool.
There's a lot of cool stuff like that.
Assassin's Creed games always sound cool.
Yeah,
That's what I want to talk to you about. You didn't like 3. What's your impression now? You went and saw it, or did you just hear about it? I'm not even sure what you saw.
We went and saw a demo, so we saw the 2 trailers that were released today, as well as some like in-engine early like alpha-style footage. Sure. Like it definitely isn't done, although it's been in development for quite a while. I mean, the prevailing theory is that, which I don't know anything about this, and maybe it's not true, but a lot of people are suggesting this may have been a different game, an open world pirate game that has since been kind of retconned into an Assassin's Creed game. I don't know if there's any truth behind that, but I find that really interesting because this has been development. I mean, of course, this is an annualized franchise, but this has been development for about 2 years, it sounds like.
Gotcha.
And I don't know. I think you nailed it. Like the reveal of Assassin's Creed games are always really cool. They make it sound really cool. When you sit down to play it, will it be as cool as they make it sound? I don't know.
But three certainly wasn't.
Yeah,
I still stand out as the one person who was like, I was enjoying Assassin's Creed 3 for the 3 hours I played it, and then it got sidetracked.
So you never played as Connor?
No, I never played as Connor. No.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's what's so crazy. Like, I think Haytham's actually really cool. Mitch and I have that conversation a lot. Like, I think Haytham's a really interesting character, but Connor just isn't. And like a lot of people who defend Assassin's Creed 3 say that was on purpose. Say that it's like he's meant to be very stoic. He's meant to kind of take in things that are going on, and all he really cares about is doing the right thing. Like, right. He's not meant to be this like really enthusiastic guy with like a lot of personality. But to me, it's like, then why make him your main character? Like, I have to care about him to care about what's going on.
Yeah, I just feel like, well, Greg heard me play the game, so.
I hear you play a lot of games.
Because I was just screaming at the TV for a week.
No, I mean, I finished Tomb Raider this weekend, and like in Tomb Raider, you care about what's happening in Lara Croft, even if you don't care about the people around her and some of the other things. Like, when she's learning, when she's worried about something, like, you care that she cares, and that just totally isn't the case for Connor. Like, I never understood his motivation, and it took me so long to become that character that I was already invested in somebody else. Like, I don't know, I just didn't. It didn't feel like they did the characterization right for me.
I saw a lot of kids on Twitter today. Rich George, you know, obviously leads Assassin's Creed coverage for us. Mm-hmm. He was tweeting, he was retweeting a lot of responses. And he was like, you know, this isn't, people are like, this is too quick of a turnaround, only a year. And Rich was pointing out that it's been in development so long. And somebody pointed out something interesting that was, that's fine, but that also means they have no chance to learn from the mistakes of Assassin's Creed 3. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that's true too. I mean, that's Ubisoft is a very, very big company. I put up an interview today with the managing director of Ubisoft France, and they have something like 26 studios now in like multiple countries. Like, it's like they're in Paris, they're in Kiev, they're in Montreal. I mean, they're very spread out, and so, you know, they have a lot of different teams working on these games. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure this was in development concurrently with AC3. Like, I think that's probably true, that there's not a lot of opportunities for them to step back and look at consumer feedback maybe until the next one. Mm. And I wonder now if they're breaking out of that pattern. Like, maybe now it will be, next year it'll be 5, the next year it'll be 6. Like, maybe they're not going to do spinoffs anymore.
At some point, you got to stop saying 5 and 6, though.
Yeah, I agree.
You got to get away from that. Sounds crazy. Yeah.
Maybe the spinoffs will all be on Vita.
Yeah.
I wonder if they'll do another Vita game.
Yeah, we'll see.
I'm not convinced that they won't. Yeah, it did. It sold really well.
Yep. Well, for Vita.
Yeah, 600,000 copies. That's pretty good for any game, to be honest.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, shut up. Also, do you like it that he's the only one wearing headphones?
I like being able to hear your voice.
You can hear them when you take them off. We just don't sound like we're on radio.
I'm deaf without them.
Number 3. Is Gran Turismo 6 a PlayStation 3 game? It certainly seems like it. In an interview with Silicon Republic, SCEE's, that's Sony Computer Entertainment Europe, Greg. We call them SCEE. Here at IGN. Senior Vice President Michael Denny noted that GT6 is coming to PS3 in 2013 when he was talking about PlayStation 3's longevity. He said it with conviction and didn't go back and try to correct himself. This created such a stir that Silicon Republic actually released the audio of him saying it, and well, he definitely said it. We reached out to Sony for comment, and all they told us is that we'll know more soon. Listeners might know Michael Denny because he was on stage for like a half an hour during the PS4 reveal, so he's in the know. He's not like some mid-level executive. He's a pretty big deal. He's intimately involved with first-party development for Sony. I 100% believe that Gran Turismo 6 is a PlayStation 3 game, and it will
the
come out in 2013.
The fact that they haven't clarified says yes, it is 100%.
Well, and plus, Colin, you nailed it. Like, I mean, listen to how he says it. He doesn't say it like he's like fumbling for names in his head. Beyond, Last of Us, and GT6. Like, that's not how he says it. He just lists it off really confidently with the list of other games.
Yeah, he's like The Last of Us and Beyond Two Souls and GT6.
Just put
a little
of
effect. That was somebody who was raging.
That guy, Michael Denny, right?
That guy has a really—it's
a subtle accent.
Yeah, but his voice, like every time I hear him, I'm like, "That's Michael Denny. I know it's him." And he's like got a very specific way of speaking, so I'm not going to try to mimic it. But he said it like he thought it was already revealed or whatever.
Yeah,
and I agree with Greg. Just knowing Sony, that the fact that they just won't talk about it means that it's true.
Yeah,
which is typical.
I mean, the question is, and we have a PlayStation conversation about this already, but do you think that it's both, or do you think it's just PS3?
No, I think it's just PS3. Like I said in the PlayStation conversation, this now puts Drive Club and the fact that Evolution Studios is working on a realistic simulation racer completely in context, because if GT... Let's put it all in the context.
Let's do it. Get the context table
in
here,
Goldfarb. Hold on. All right, I got it.
So...
Monster walk, man.
Cazenori said back in 2010 that Gran Turismo 6 was in development. We've known about this game since Gran Turismo 5 was released. In 2010, there was no way that PS4 dev kits were available, even the first-party studios. So the studio likely went on to start working on Gran Turismo 6, trying to probably get it out a little sooner than it's going to end up being out, which is their normal, you know, way of doing business. And when they realized that they were going to have a very late PlayStation 3 game, they took Evolution, which apparently, rumor is, assimilated a lot of UK racing team talent. That is away from the arcade racers that they usually make in MotorStorm. And they started making Drive Club. Now, Drive Club, I don't think, is a launch title. I think Drive Club will be out in 2014. They haven't confirmed it either way. Now, if that's true and Gran Turismo comes out in, say, September, maybe, then that makes perfect sense. There's a 75 million unit install base. Gran Turismo 5 is the best-selling PS3 game of all time. So assume that Gran Turismo 6 will be up there as
on
well.
On a disc. Let's not forget about Super Rub-A-Dub.
Yeah, that's true. Super Rub-A-Dub is a big seller. Big seller. It all makes sense. I'm totally confident that GT6 is a PS3-only game. Polyphony, I don't think, has the bandwidth to make a PS4 and a PS3 game at the same time. I'm sure the PS4 game's in production, but I think that they're probably working on this game to polish it right now. And if I, you know, was looking into the future and kind of figuring things out, I would say that it's a PS3 and a Vita game.
I think it'll be
both.
I agree with that. I think, you know, the point of having a racing game at launch, and McCaffrey says this all the time, it's why he thinks that the next Xbox will launch with a Forza game. You want to have a racing game available in the launch window in roughly the first 6 months of the system, because it's such an easy way to show off what next gen is capable of. Right. Having that like crazy car model and people going, holy crap.
That car looks like my car.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing with GT6, if they're like up-resing it from PS3, you don't really get that. Right. You know, putting it on PS4 as a PS3 game with better resolution isn't going to give you that effect. So I totally agree. I think it's been development long enough that this is likely a PS3 game. And, you know, we reported on that survey a while back that it's also going to be crossplay on Vita.
So. Yeah, I think it'll be a PS3 Vita crossplay game. But we'll see what happens. And I hope we learn about it soon. We probably won't learn about it until E3, to be honest.
I played a lot of Need for Speed on Vita, so I would love a really cool like racing sim. That would actually be really fun.
Number four. What?
You can go far just being creepy. It's how we pass the time during the Roper Report.
Number four, PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale is getting new DLC and an exclusive broken by me. Two new characters are joining the roster, Isaac Clarke from Dead Space and Zeus from God of War. A new stage is also coming, mixing up Medieval with the Unfinished Swan. The DLC will be available on March 19th. I've known about this for like a month and a half, so I had to stay really, really quiet.
Yeah, you're lucky this didn't blow up like Black Flag.
I know. I saw this a long time ago.
I mean, it's crazy how excited people really must be for Zeus, because what a beloved character.
Yeah, I wasn't a good
I think Isaac's cool. I think that's a cool
idea. Isaac is cool. I was really disappointed when I was down there for other reasons and they showed it to me, I saw Zeus and I was like, this is a complete waste. But yeah. He's a cool character in the game. It's just like, I want, why is, you know, well, it's for Ascension, I'm sure.
I mean, there's so much God of War in PlayStation All-Stars, right? You have two stages. You have Kratos himself. Now you have Zeus.
There's the Boots of Hermes in the level.
I think there's a couple items, right?
Right. I can't remember the other one. The head isn't one of them, right?
Medusa.
That was one of the rumored ones. It's one of Kratos' moves, but it's not something you pick up.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I think it is.
Is it? Is it?
Yeah. It was just... Was it
DLC or something?
Yeah, you had to download a patch to get it because it wasn't ready yet. Remember, the trophy was originally in it and it screwed up the trophy list. Right. Remember that?
Thank you. That's why I asked me.
That's how we figured out how trophy lists work. It's all sequential.
Interesting.
Because of that trophy being removed.
But yeah, like Isaac's cool. Isaac's a cool idea. But yeah, Zeus was like, what? Really?
Yeah. I think that shows in kind of the comments on the site too. That's how most people felt.
Yeah.
But
what do we know anything about what this means for future DLC with like Superbot, you know, and them breaking
Sony
up?
Santa Monica is taking over. Okay. I think they were already doing this.
I would assume this was the final Superbot thing though, right?
Yeah, I think Superbot was not done with it. And Santa Monica took it over, and I wouldn't be surprised if this was it. But we'll see.
Okay.
That would mess up one of my 2013 predictions, which is that we're going to see new DLC at E3, but they're not going to address it at the press conference.
Mm-hmm. That'd be cool. Number five, according to Sony Europe CEO Jim Ryan, PS3 games you don't know about are still coming. So games you don't know about yet.
Yeah, games you haven't heard of. Unannounced games.
Me specifically?
Yeah. Quote, there's other stuff on PS3 yet to be announced with... God, I can't fucking talk.
It's fine.
That's because I actually just misspelled it. There's other stuff on PS3 yet to be announced.
If the word isn't perfectly spelled,
too.
You can't figure it out.
Well, I said with, he noted. That's end quote. Is he referring to the aforementioned Gran Turismo 6? Probably.
Yeah. You have to assume.
I don't know what else could possibly be unannounced.
What other franchises, well, other than Patapon, relax. What other franchises do they even have that that we haven't seen from in a while
that
aren't going to be
on PS4?
It's
more about like what studio is making these games.
Starhawk 2. Yeah.
It could. I heard an interesting theory that Little Big Planet 3 might be a PS3 game, which actually would be interesting. But I don't know if that's really true.
Silly, but it'd be interesting.
Yeah. And I still think Uncharted 4 might be a PS3 game.
That would be crazy.
Number six, Capcom's Remember Me, an interesting-looking game, first revealed last year, has a release date. It'll come to the U.S. on June 4th, Australia on June 6th, and Europe on June 7th. That game looks really fucking cool. Yeah.
If you haven't seen stuff about Remember Me, go watch a trailer. Go read some stuff.
I love the
it.
Plot of that game, too. Yeah, I think too. That's actually really, really
that
interesting.
That I don't remember anymore.
So it's 2084 in Neo-Paris, and the idea is you play this girl named Nilan, who wakes up in a prison and has no memory. Uh-huh. But the technology exists that she can basically hack into people's heads, take their memories, and learn about herself. So you're discovering things as you go, and you're discovering the combat you can do. And as you progress through the game, you're learning moves because you're remembering that you're capable of doing them.
Remember me.
And I remember seeing it at New York Comic Con. And it was really cool that they showed a scene where you go into people's minds and manipulate their own memories to make them do the things you want them to do. And she goes into like some executive's memory to manipulate him so that he thinks he killed his wife. Damn. But he didn't really kill his wife.
Then he kills himself.
And then he kills himself.
Yeah. Damn. It's hardcore.
That sucks.
It's I read it.
All fucked up. She's at home making a pot roast.
He like in the real memory he like so it's cool like in the real memory it's almost like Heavy Rain in a way. In the real memory you go in and you see what happens and he throws like a wine bottle at the door next door and it breaks and she like runs out all mad or whatever obviously.
Well, that doesn't sound well.
And then you can go in and start manipulating shit. And like, there's like a gun and like a glass and like all sorts of stuff. And you try to make it so that he hurts her, but like it backfires. Like he puts the gun down and like keeps it cocked and he ends up killing himself with it on a mistake and stuff like that. But then it's something like he throws the bottle at her and like actually kills her in the memory. But that didn't really happen. But he wakes up from the memory and then he's like all distraught and he kills himself.
Yep. Yeah. It's.
I think the same screwed up stuff. Like Muppets come in, kill people.
I read an article by Colin Moriarty that this was originally a PS3 exclusive.
It was.
Yeah, that's true.
It was. Number seven.
The longest one on your list here.
Yep.
I enjoy that.
Yeah, that's a big
I'm sure it'll be for the biggest game on the list too, right?
The sequel to the PSN exclusive Rainbow
Moon. God, I lost that, man. I would have thought
it's called Rainbow Skies and it's due out in 2014. East Asiasoft, the game's publisher, provided us with a bunch of exclusive information, including that it will focus on playing in two parallel worlds, which sounds really cool. Sounds like Final Fantasy VI. That there will be a greater visual variety in the sequel, including a better, more robust soundtrack, that there will be new camera angles, blah, blah, blah. The story will be better fleshed out. There'll be decisions in it, which is cool. The publisher declined to nail down what consoles it will be on, though they told me that you can take a pretty good guess as where it's going to end up, considering where its other three games, Soldner X, Soldner X 2, and Rainbow Moon ended up.
PSP.
Exactly. yeah.
Best off.
Your
PSP.
We'll be able to talk more about the game soon, I think.
I'm waiting. I haven't played Rainbow Moon at all. I'm waiting for the Vita one. So.
Yeah, me too.
The Vita one will be done Q3.
Exciting.
The wafers are
around. They are very, very small, so they are having... You know, they have to take some time. I don't want to say they're having trouble because I don't know that, but they're taking, you know, it takes time. I think there's only like 10 of them.
What, like they're short guys, so their fingers don't work quickly?
You beat me to it. I was gonna be like, they have to call people into the room to lift the Vita.
Number eight, March's PlayStation Plus perks have been revealed for North America. There are 5 free games this month. Vita's Disgaea 3, Absence of Detention, PSN's Joe Danger, the movie, PS3's Spec Ops The Line, which is fucking awesome, PSP's Tekken 6, and PSN's The Cave. Guardians of Middle-Earth, Quantum Conundrum, Dungeon Defenders, Foosball 2012, and Plants vs. Zombies on Vita are all going to be removed from the free catalog soon, so download them now.
Dun, dun, dun. Spec Ops The Line, that's a big win.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's a really, really good game. One of my games of the year last year.
I still haven't played it.
What the F?
No, I need to.
All right, you don't get a BioShock Infinite disc until you beat Spec Ops.
This podcast is brought to you by Audible, a provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 titles to choose from. For listeners of Beyond, Audible is offering a free audiobook download when you sign up for a free 30-day trial. If you're not already quoting from it every day, may we suggest checking out Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. It's like The Matrix mixed with video games, Star Wars, and transforming Japanese robots, and we love it. To get started, head to audiblepodcast.com/podcastbeyond and follow the instructions to get your free audiobook. On with the show.
Number nine. To celebrate Vita's first year on the market, Sony has released a new slew of freebies and discounts in addition to the significant Vita disc software discounts announced last week. I can't type. For starters, anyone at all, PS Plus or not, can download these 4 games for free. Wild Arms,
ooh,
Patapon, Piotama, and Patchwork Heroes. The latter three are PSP games. Wild Arms, of course, is a PS1 classic.
Patapon, go ahead and download it for free. Check it out. See if you enjoy it. If you enjoy it, stop playing it and buy Patapon 3. Because you can buy Patapon 3 now. They just added that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, so
Patapon 3 is like the one. That's the one they learned. They brought it together. There you go.
17 additional Vita games have been discounted for 30% for everyone and 50% for PSP as well. So including all of the deals, it's virtually every Vita game is now on sale. Yeah. Which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing.
And number 10, finally, sadly, layoffs have hit TimeGate Studios, the devs who helped make the critical disaster Aliens Colonial Marines. The studio also worked on Section 8 and Fear Files. Our best go out to all of those affected.
That's it.
That's it.
That's the end of the rope report, everybody. Gold Farm.
Mm-hmm.
You're excited for this Bioshock Infinite.
I'm pretty excited.
It's coming up soon.
Yep.
But it's not here yet.
Nope.
If you wanted to go into a store right now and buy games off of a shelf, games that were out, where would you go to find out what came out this week?
The official list of IGN software updated by the IGN editors.
Oh my god, that was bad.
I know, that was pretty terrible.
All right.
How close was I?
Like 50%. Okay. The official list of upcoming PlayStation software on all three platforms
by the IGN editors. Damn it. It's been a long day. I'm really tired.
Me too. at retail, Tomb Raider's out.
Awesome game.
Yeah.
I beat it. I beat it. You're into it. Like only like 30 minutes.
I'm going back and playing Bioshock right now.
Do I need to the copy I have right now? Go back in the library. Or should I give? Are you going to play it soon?
People are fighting for it. I would say hang on to it.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's the whole point though. If somebody, it's short. If he's going to play Bioshock and Platinum Bioshock,
yeah, that's fine. Just get. I don't care.
You'll get it eventually.
MLB 13, the show is out, which is cool. Oh,
like that?
And Atelier Aisha, the Alchemist of Dusk, which we have not received in the office yet.
Damn it!
For obvious
people
reasons,
are fighting over that one too. Got to keep the library copy.
Vita, MLB 13, the show is also. Remember, you have to buy these games separately.
But you can get a discount if you bought them off Amazon together.
Yeah,
with like $20.
It was funny seeing McCaffrey holding a Vita today.
He's like, "What is this?"
Like it was an alien artifact. Like examining it.
PSN: BitTrip presents Runner 2, Fist of the North Star 2, Ken's Rage, Fuel Overdose, Germinator, and Port Royale 3, Pirates and Merchants. Port Royale 3, I've been meaning to play for a long time. That game sounds really fucking cool.
Germinator Runner 2. Good when we first saw it a long time ago.
Yeah, Germinator's on Vita as well. This is the PSN one.
Runner 2 is supposed to be amazing. Like, Altano won't shut up about it. Mitch really likes it too. Mm-hmm.
On PS2, PS2 Classics, two Rockstar games, Midnight Club 2 and Midnight Club Street Racing. And demos for BitTrip Presents Runner 2, Knit Underground on Vita, and Tiger Woods PGA Tour 14 on PS3. That's it.
Also,
sports noises with Greg.
Yeah, I nailed them, right? Go for it. What do you want topic of the week to be?
Moriarty's Bioshock playthrough.
Oh, yeah. How's that going?
It's good.
You played before?
Yeah.
You played it once or twice.
Yeah.
You're going to platinum it now, though.
Yeah.
It's a hard platinum.
I never got far.
I mean, it's an even harder 100% because you have to do the challenge rooms and stuff, which are not fun. Those are not good.
Yeah, I want to prepare again, and I would like to beat Bioshock 2. I never beat Bioshock 2. So, yeah, that's fun.
Okay.
All right, topic of the week.
All right, good topic of the week.
The game came out in 2007. We shouldn't really give a shit about talking about it right now, should we?
Okay, no, fine. Chris Abrams writes in to beyond@ign.com. He says, Beyond. At the end of the new trailer for Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, when the box art and release date is revealed, there is a tagline coming to next generation console. Also down in the bottom, next to the PlayStation 3 logo, is the PS4 logo. Is Sony hinting that the PlayStation 4 will be released in November with Assassin's Creed as a launch title?
No.
They don't say day and date. They just say also coming to next gen consoles.
That's how they're getting around it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's October 29th is AC4.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think just like we were saying, I mean, maybe PS4 will be up then. I mean, we played this game with Wii U also. People were announcing their games. They're like also coming to Wii U at a later date, and we just never know. My money's still in November for PS4.
Gotcha.
Agreed.
It'll be shortly thereafter, though.
Ryan S. from Buffalo, New York writes in. He says Beyond.
Beyond.
At one point, when talking about the PlayStation 4 hardware, Greg mentioned the possibility of the new SimCity possibly coming to console. This has been Cal Moriarty's jam for a long time. He says it's coming.
I don't think it'll come.
The game looks amazing, and I'd love to play it, but I really don't want to spend the money upgrading my 2-year-old PC right now to run it. Do you think the PlayStation 4 will use SimCity?
Yes.
SimCity. Jason Haber from... Yeah, I got his name right.
Maxis.
Jason Haber from Maxis. I was more concerned that I got his last name wrong.
Sure.
He came on up at noon today, Monday, which will be old by the time he sees
it. Did he talk about that?
He did. I asked him, and he did the whole PRA dance around it. Yeah,
I'll take that bet.
It's definitely coming in a console.
Right now they're focusing on Mac, he says. Oh, there's a pizza
bet
online. There he goes.
Sure, I'll take that bet.
Mitchell Morgan quit school.
Yeah.
Add this one to the tracker.
No, I'll happily take that bet. What's the deadline? No, I think it will not. I think it'll stay on PC.
I don't know, a few years at the most. I think it'll be out probably next year.
Let's give it 1 year from today announcement. If it hasn't been announced by 1 year from today, I win.
18 months from today.
So E3. If it hasn't been announced by E3 2014,
okay,
then I win.
Sure.
There you go. My problem with it is this, that I think that right now they're working on the Mac version, getting it to run on the Mac. That's still just a general spring release.
Yeah.
And then once they get past that, they're going to sit down and try to worry about how mouse and keyboard figure into this, how the control, like DualShock works with it.
I don't think it'll
happen. You don't want that crap.
To clarify, by the way, Mitchell, if they do announce it at E3 2014, Colin still wins. Like, I'm saying when that show ends, they will still not have announced it.
That game is coming to PS4.
No way.
Okay.
What are we going to see, Diablo 3?
I know. Remember when I said Diablo was going to come to consoles? I know. That was totally out of left field. What the hell was I thinking with Diablo 3 thinking I was going
to
come?
Paul writes into Beyond at IGN.com just like you can. He says, when Diablo 3 comes out for PlayStation 3 later this year, do you think it will be included? Do you think it will include in an expansion pack? Rumors are when BlizzCon hits later this year, they will discuss a Diablo 3 expansion or a WoW expansion. I don't think it would. I think it'll be the base game.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they'd even support it with DLC. I'm not sure that I'm interested to see how this game does. On consoles. Yeah,
I really am too. I mean, people who are the hardcore Diablo fans, not only have they already played it on PC, but a lot of them are burnt out on PC. Like, there was this weird backlash to Diablo 3, and they haven't added, like, the PvP expansion. They haven't added all the things they said they were going to do. If we suddenly see the core game arrive on PS3 and then be behind the PC version when it finally does get PvP and stuff, I just can't imagine people caring.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's why, like, for me, that was, you know, we all kind of thought Diablo 3 was coming, as Colin always says. But actually seeing it during that press conference was still surprising.
I think Clements was the only one who ever argued against you, right?
Yeah,
yeah, probably.
I think so. What happened to him.
Well, but yeah, it was surprising me to see it at the press conference. But now that I've kind of had time to let it sink in, I just don't think it's that big of a deal.
Now you're mad. You don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I wanted him to come out and say WoW. I thought if WoW was coming, that would have been amazing.
Or just a new game from Blizzard would have been really cool.
No, nobody cares.
StarCraft Ghost on PS3.
We're bringing it back. By the way, Clements. He now works at Deep Silver.
Congratulations, everybody. Round of applause. Community manager? Is that a title?
U.S. community manager.
U.S. community manager. So they'll go over to Deep Silver.
Yeah.
He's
going to talk about Saints Row 4.
Dead Island.
I just spit. It narrowly missed your head.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I would have never known. I'd be like, is it raining in here? I'm getting blessed by the Holy Spirit.
I was thinking about when we were talking about Jimmy John, the sandwich place or whatever, and you were talking about how his parents would... Yeah,
Jimmy John, you get out of that kitchen. You get to school. Now, Ma, I'm gonna make sandwiches for a living.
Wild.
Ain't nobody buying your sandwiches, but I'll be so fast, no freak, Mom.
We haven't been there in like weeks.
I know.
Colin, you and I were going a lot. We haven't been to Soup in a while either.
I know. I haven't had Soup in a while. Yeah, I'm kind of over that place.
Let's take a walk.
This is kind of beef.
You should go to Jimmy John's tomorrow and then bring back a sandwich and give it to me on the live stream.
You want
to
do that? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, he's
done with too that. Busy.
Decline Embry writes in. He says,
Beyond.
Do you guys think the PS4 will be playable at PAX Prime? Not PAX East in a couple weeks. PAX Prime in the summer post E3. I think it's a good question.
Well, PS4? Is that what the question is?
I think
we'll play it at
E3. It'll be playable at E3, yes. Yeah, I think so.
That's their chance. Because PAX isn't a press show, really. It's a community show.
Yeah, I think I would even say Comic-Con is possible.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah.
Wait, Comic-Con's after E3 this year?
Yeah. July, I think.
Correct, yeah. That's right.
In the sweltering San Diego heat, what a pleasure Comic-Con is.
I mean, that'll be insane. If they have PlayStation 4 at Comic-Con, I mean, Sony's booth is already always overtaken. It would be incredibly crazy. See, I think they'd have a better shot at doing behind-closed-doors press demos then.
They might also do the thing they did with Vita where they rent out like a little space and do like a Vita experience, you know? Mm-hmm. They could do that for PS4.
Oh, yeah, true.
Nintendo used to do that with like mall tours for the Wii.
They did do that. I'm scrolling through the Beyond mailbag. Like I said, I haven't been back to my desk in a long time.
It's okay.
Fill some time. Talk to him about something. Trophy.
How are you doing, Colin?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm really tired.
I'm really tired, too.
It's been a long day.
I beat Sly Cooper Thieves in Time yesterday.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. I told Ninja XYZ, thank you for making the entire game yourself.
Yeah, he did. He did. Yeah. He worked real hard on that.
I have to figure, if anyone can tweet at me and tell me how to do the, because I did it on Vita. I beat it on Vita. I have like 30-something percent of the trophies. I'm going to borrow the PS3 version from Greg. I'm going to take it home, and I have to figure out how to double up on trophies. I'm told you don't have to replay the whole game.
No, you don't.
You just turn it on. You load your save and download your save.
But my problem is, on the Vita version, the only option, because there's a cross-save thing in the pause menu, all it says is download from cloud. And I hit it, and it just doesn't do anything. It just times out.
I think that it's because you might not have activated a PS3 version of the game yet.
Okay. So maybe that'll work.
So try it out. It's very easy.
Okay.
It'll be fine, yeah.
Okay.
It's so quick you'll freak.
Jimmy John! Eric Flicker writes in, what's up, Beyond Crew?
Hello.
Just curious. Nothing. What's up? Hello. Just curious. Do you think that it's weird that with the PlayStation 4, games will no longer have the title screen asking you to press start?
Beyond.
There's no start button. There's an option button.
Oh.
Remember? So what are you going to say now?
I didn't think
touch
about
your
that.
Touchpad. Hit that touchpad.
You're blowing my mind.
Rub that touchpad.
Press the share button.
Yeah, I haven't thought about it either. I, no, guess it is.
I mean, we had heard, we still obviously haven't gotten our hands in the controller, but we had heard in the past that the actual touchscreen itself can be clicked in like a button. I don't know if that input is still there, but theoretically,
you just
can
say pause right into the controller.
Start button, go. Xbox on.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a really good point. I've never thought about that. So I don't know.
Weird. It'll be weird. Asking, would it be weird? Yeah. It's going to be weird. Yeah.
I mean,
and then
say,
if Xbox has a start button, then it is another one of those weird
a
things.
A lot of games just say press any button.
Not as many as you think.
Sorry.
We'll see what Bioshock says. Cody writes into beyond@IGN.com. He says, I love my Vita and the games I have on it, but it also has the potential for cool apps. Is there any news about more apps coming to the Vita? And what apps would you like to see arrive?
Wake Up
on
Club.
The Vita? Yeah, you have Wake Up Club. There you go.
That's a game.
It is the game of waking up for work.
The hardest game of all.
I get tweets sometimes. They're like, I just beat your ass in Wake Up Club. And I'm like, all right, well, it's not like I'm actively playing it.
Hey, man, I got up quicker than you.
Back at Comic-Con, and this is already out in the UK, similar to whatever Frostbite or Frobisher says. That took forever to come out here. But they showed that graffiti app.
Yeah.
Where you tag things, and then if we passed each other in the Muni, and I'd go and I'd look at the same thing, I'd see your tag, and I thought that was a cool idea. Wow.
Sure.
Just touch my lips, just touch the mic. I hate when that happens. But I thought that was a cool idea. I'd like to see that app come up.
Yeah, no, that'd be awesome. There are a lot of like little productivity apps that would just be nice. I mean, think about the things you do in an iPhone that you don't have in the Vita.
What would I do that? Like, I don't, when I have the Vita, even like Twitter, I'll be playing the Vita, and I'll be like, I want to check Twitter. I'll pull out Twitter.
I would check Twitter from my Vita.
Do you?
No.
Oh,
is there an app? I didn't even know there was an app.
You idiot! Yes! There's been a Twitter app for a long, long time.
Welp. So to answer the question, no, I don't use apps on the Vita.
Yeah, you don't even think about it that way. You don't there's two separate devices.
I've used Netflix on Vita. It's actually really nice and OLED. But that's about it.
Okay. Well, speaking of apps on the Vita, there's a new app coming to the Vita for Dust 514. We're going to talk about Dust 514 with David Arita right now from CCP. Colin?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Okay.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. The brilliant mind behind Dust 514, David Reed, here in the office. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
Colin's here, too.
Hello.
And then who's this guy over here? CCP's resident?
Senior PR specialist, Alex Brewer, CCP Gonzo.
CCP Gonzo. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
David, how many Red Bulls have you had so far today?
I'm on number 3.
And drinking a cup of coffee.
Well, you know, it's CCP's a global empire. We got stuff going on in Shanghai and Reykjavik, and there's not
so
a lot of sleep
don't
in between.
Sleep. Not you a lot. Need to be awake at all times.
Absolutely.
Talk to me a little bit about Dust 514. It's finally upon us. People can download it. Everyone can play it.
Absolutely.
But it's the beta.
It is still open beta. We officially entered open beta on January 22nd. I think last time we had this discussion, we were in closed beta on the verge of a big thing we did with IGN in the closed beta. January 22, we opened it up officially, what we call unfettered access to all PlayStation 3 owners. We've moved from what was hundreds of thousands of players in the closed beta to millions of players very quickly. The attraction between not just people playing Dust, but people between Eve and Dust playing together has just been really interesting to watch.
Believe it or not, a lot of times people start downloading the podcast Beyond. They're new to it. Colin, I had to answer a comment today on last week's Beyond about why do people yell Beyond?
Mm.
And the kid's like, I've been listening for 2 years and don't know why. And I'm like, oh my God! Anyways, if somebody's new, tell me about Eve talking to Dust.
Yeah, sure.
What is Eve? Is it like Adam Eve from Invincible?
It's a little different.
A great comic.
Wow. All right. Nice reference.
Thank you.
I'm catching up. I'm caught up. So it is not like Adam Eve. Eve is a game that's been running for 10 years now. Mm-hmm. We are on the verge of our 10th birthday on May 6th, 2013. Game started with 30 developers in Reykjavik, Iceland, building a game that they thought might have a chance of competing in the market alongside the likes of Earth and Beyond and much larger budgeted titles. But what happened, of course, over time was Eve and the design team there hit on something very unique, that rather than designing content with you know, teams of people making, in a fantasy world, dungeons and quests and NPCs and things like that. They put tools in the universe so that gamers could figure out how to do their own stories, how to interact with each other. So as Eve continues to have expansions, it's more about how players are able to interact with each other in ways that they continue to do in a very interesting way. And so what happens is we have this real emergent gameplay in what we call our sandbox. And on top of that, we have a single shard universe. Everyone playing Eve is on the same server with everybody else. And so we've had a peak concurrency of over 68,000 simultaneous players on our one server compared to what most MMOs have in the range of, you know, 2,000, 5,000 people on a server. So Eve is all about, at its moment-to-moment experience, flying in space, building, harvesting resources, corporations going to war, corporations allying, deep economy. It is a very interesting simulation of what life feels like it may be like in 20,000 years. Mm-hmm. Now, Eve has been running for 10 years now. It's the only MMO that's continued to grow every year of its existence. And we were able to just announce a few days ago that Eve is now over 500,000 subscribers worldwide. That's a pretty big thing given all the MMOs that have crashed and failed over those years that we continue to grow.
Rest in peace, Crimecraft.
Rest in peace, many. And again, it does come back to that single shard sandbox. And so Dust, what is Dust about, right? Well, put Eve on the side for a minute. Dust 514, at its essence, is a first-person shooter that's completely free to play only on PlayStation 3. We're in our open beta now and have millions of people running around on the tens of thousands of planets in the Eve universe where they are battling for territory control, seizing districts. If you seize all the districts on a planet, you and your mates, your corporation, own the planet and harvest the resources from that. You can use those resources in the giant geopolitical metagame of Eve Online, working with and against Eve players and Dust players as you go. But at its essence, Dust, you're playing a first-person shooter with some interesting persistence and customization elements you don't have in typical first-person shooters. But otherwise, you'll find a pretty familiar moment-to-moment experience there. And then Dust and Eve are literally connected. They both are filled with players who are simultaneously all playing on our Tranquility supercomputer shard based in London.
Now, here's my question. We talked about this when you were getting ready, when you're in closed beta, when you guys, you know, we've previewed the game before for IGN. Now that it's out in the public, are the players on PlayStation Network filtering in and making sense for the universe? Because you talk about all this stuff, and like, yeah. Oh, yeah, and they'll be getting resources, and I would think it would just be people in there running around, calling each other bad names, shooting each other in the head, and then bailing out, not being part of, like, this rich tapestry you guys are trying to weave together.
Yeah, well said. No, you're starting to see that, right? You're starting to see the elements of this happen. Early in the closed beta, it was really more about, you know, we're building a first-person shooter, it's running on a console, it's free-to-play, let's make sure this works, right? So you had a limited number of maps, you had a limited number of play modes, you had a limited number of items in that people could equip and such like that. Now that the open beta has joined Eve on Tranquility, what we are seeing is that actual interesting social dynamic happening now. You know, Dust players and Eve players are very different, not just kind of in terms of the experience they're having on the game that they're playing right now, but just demographically and psychographically, right? You know, your shooter audience tends to be a bit younger than your Eve audience, which right now is, you know, more on the PC, more the MMORPG kind of hardcore audience, right? But what's happened is these people have come together has been this fascinating experiment we're seeing happening where they don't necessarily speak the same language, but they have found ways to work together where a corporation filled of Dust and Eve players has similar galaxy domination aims, and they're able to work together to that effect. It's the kind of thing that, you know, we had an inkling of what we would start to see, but we're only beginning to see it really happening now, that Eve players and Dust players are now actually working together strategically, where a Dust team lines up, and of course, from a shooter perspective, there's the strategy of, all right, you're the sniper, you're the heavy, I've got the logistics, you're getting that together. Now you add that with the complexity of, now let's work with our Eve friends, and let's get people who are going to drop the orbital artillery support from the background while we're out there in the trenches fighting the ground war. Gotcha. It's a really exciting thing that we're seeing. And the best part is, you know, there was a concern, I think, at some level about, you know, I mean, you don't know until you know how those cultures are going to mesh together, right? And it is very similar to, I guess, at some level, the, you know, the Marines and the Air Force finding a way to work together when they go to war together. You know, the Dust mercenaries and the Eve mercenaries may not be from the same walks of life, but they are in there together, finding ways to fight together with mercenaries alongside capsuleers.
Gotcha.
So what are you learning from the beta? I think what a lot of people took from the closed beta when we played it was that it's very, very complicated. The game is very deep. And I think, you know, just from reading the comments that we got on Podcast Beyond or on the pieces we wrote, actually was turning some people off. How have you guys streamlined that process to make it a little simpler for people to understand? Because I think once you get your head wrapped around it, it's not It's still complicated, but it's not quite as as complicated as it seems.
No, you're right. It is a – I mean, the challenge for us is not that different from the challenge of Eve, right, you know, in what we're doing with Dust, in that, you know, Eve has a lot of depth, complexity, intensity, and that has made the new player onboarding a pretty tricky thing, right, where, you know, people who figure out Eve and get to call it day 90, day 100 or whatever – generally never leave, right? That's why the business just keeps growing. But those first 90 days can be a little rough of throwing you off in a dark corner of space with a bunch of sharp objects and hoping you figure it out has kind of what it's been. And Eve has made strides on this regard. Part of what the Retribution expansion was and some of the run-up to that has been making that new player experience a little, you know, sanding down some of those rough edges. And Dust has that in a more focused and acute way in a lot of ways because it's a free-to-play title on a console, right? I mean, if we bring a guy into Dust and that guy's not having fun in the first 10, 30, 60 minutes, right, why wouldn't he just go back to Battlefield or Call of Duty or Halo? It's right there, right? They haven't made that investment that you do when you buy a game for $60 or something like that. So the impetus on us has gotten very focused now. And what you'll see as we move from open beta to launch, very big strides are being made right now internally with the team in Shanghai, who is just absolutely, they've been killing themselves on the technical side of things. Now they're polishing up that front end. You know, it's not about making Dust easier, right? Dust is meant to be a hard game. It's meant to be complex and challenging and rewarding for people who put the time into it, but it is about making it easier to understand. I shouldn't have to, like, come into a, if you think about the earliest stages of the closed beta, you know, I would come into a marketplace and I didn't really have a good idea of what all these weapons were, and, you know, I'd try to equip a gun, but I didn't have the skill. Now I got to find the skill book. Oh, I don't have enough room in my fitting to. You know. Again, that became very complicated and detailed. But we are finding ways to streamline that for people who are like, "Hey, I want to be a sniper. Maybe I want to be a sniper with heavy armor as opposed to light armor. Let me figure that out." And it's a much easier process. You're not seeing that in closed beta right at this moment, but or sorry, open beta. But as we progress to launch, this is exactly what we are focused on.
Nice, and you know. I guess the other question I have is with the business model. You guys are already selling microtransactions. I mean, even in the beta. I mean, there's like some things you can buy on PlayStation Network, whatever. Are you confident that this business model is going to work for you? You guys are already seeing signs on the business side that this is working for you. That something like Dust can definitely be a profitable endeavor.
Yeah, it is. I mean, again, it's the kind of thing that. You know, you've got to hone all of these things together, right? There's cost of building a game, but then, of course, in the idea of having a live service, there's the cost of operating it, keeping it up, and adding to it on a regular basis. You know, this isn't a game where you get to shed, you know, if anything, teams tend to grow with successful MMOs, right? I mean, Eve started with 30 people and is over 200 people now running that game. And Dust will be that way as well. And so it's important for us to, you know, we're seeing the early signs of good traction in the microtransaction business there, right? You know, it's important for Dust to make sure that we cleave strongly to the fiber of being a skill-based game, right? That there is no amount of money a person can spend and win and be the best in the game and beat other people if their skills are not strong enough and they haven't made that investment in becoming a good shooter. And so where you're seeing the traction in the microtransaction business right now is around things that have worked really well in PC-based microtransaction sorts of games. Things like in World of Tanks, you see a lot of the revenues there are coming from boosts of, you know, I'm earning more XP per second or I'm earning more currency per second kind of ideas in a way that makes a fair trade-off of time versus money in some cases, but it never lets the less skilled person win. Or things like you see in League of Legends where there are options, right? I can play League of Legends for free forever if I don't mind rotating my champion every week, right? But if I want that champion, I'm going to pay some money to do so. Dust has a very similar mechanic going in for it, right? As we think about, if I want to be that guy with that drop suit, with that weapon, and I want to customize in that way, you're going to spend a little Aurum, potentially, the virtual currency, on top of the in-game currency, our ISK. But there's never any requirement to do that. It's going to be about the flexibility and the customization you're looking for.
Cool.
I mean, do you see that? Today is interesting, right? Like, you come from, you have one foot in the PC world and one in the console, right? And so today, EA put out this conference call, and they said basically, like, yeah, we're going to put microtransactions in every game from here on out. And, like, that's a totally normal thing for a PC player to hear, but console people were flipping out on Twitter. Like, is that the future everyone needs to get used to? And, like, do you see that being, do you see free-to-play being the model for consoles as well?
Not necessarily for every game, right? I mean, I think the lesson on free-to-play is it's something that provides a lot of flexibility to gamers, right? And you know, by and large, gamers are responding very well to it, right? We're not talking about, you know, Zynga titles here running on Facebook or, you know, little casual social apps and things like that. Core games for gamers are working in this free-to-play business model. And as a result, right, more and more publishers and developers are going to start experimenting with that, and it's going to make it to the console, just like every big innovation in games has started on the PC, you know, online gaming, new genres, things like this. They all start on the PC and then they get to the console. That's what's happening now. But I don't think for a minute that means every game is going to be a microtransaction-based game. And I, you know, again, I didn't get to hear everything EA said, but I would bet some of that's a little out of context, right?
Oh,
you know,
sure, yeah.
You know, Mass Effect.
So suit, he doesn't know how to make games.
Mass Effect was not a microtransaction game, right? It was a premium title. I bought the disc at retail or downloaded it digitally over time for a premium price point, and I had the ability to expand on that. You know, that could very well be a definition of microtransaction, or maybe mini transaction. Maybe it's not quarters and nickels to buy things, but it's, you know, $10 for an expansion pack. We've been doing that forever, right? That it really shouldn't be that big a surprise to people who've been playing on the console for a long time. If, however, you know, is the question, will all games go the route that Dust514 has, where the client is free, there's no sharding, you can play everything for free, and you're only paying for the stuff that you choose to? I don't see that happening. I think different games, different genres are going to mold well to that. But again, I mean, I'm perfectly willing as a gamer to, you know, when Bethesda releases the next Elder Scrolls title, I'll be there to pay $60, $70, $80, whatever for it. There's no reason to make that a free-to-play title.
Mm-hmm. I guess the other kind of lingering question I have about Dust is, it's coming out on PS3. You guys aren't ready to talk about when. It's going to come out this year.
Soon.
And we learned when I was in New York City last week seeing PS4 that no backwards compatibility on PS4 at all for digital or retail titles. Is there any concern that Dust is coming out kind of late on PS3 in terms of its prime life cycle? I'm sure they'll still release PS3 games. And is Dust being ported to PlayStation 4?
Yeah, a couple different answers in there, right? I mean, number one, I think, you know, we all watched the conference and we've all, you know, at least we at CCP have had these discussions with Sony for a long time. It was interesting, you know, the second guy to come up and speak after Andrew House opened is David Perry talking about Gaikai, and we're exploring, right? And CCP is exploring as well how to make a PlayStation 3 version of Dust potentially work on next-generation platforms. But there's no reason for us to be concerned about the fact that, you know, the PlayStation 3 is not going away, right? There's 70 million units out there right now, and they don't all disappear on the day the first PlayStation 4 gets into the hands of gamers, right? And there's going to be a huge ecosystem of people continuing to play those games, much like, you know, at one of my previous companies launching an Xbox 360, right? It's not like people stopped playing Halo 2 the day the Xbox 360 came out. We don't see that happening for Dust either. When you think about how EVE as a service has progressed, right, how it's gone from this tiny little game with 30,000 subscribers in its first year to being over 500,000 now worldwide, it has gone through its hardware transitions as well. It's only been on the PC platform, but think about the graphics cards and the multi-core PC chips, right, that have come out over time, and EVE has kept up with that and those hardware transitions very nicely. Dust will be successful on the PS3, and it will outlive the PS3 in all likelihood.
Suck
what happens from there?
It's dancing on its grave. Oh, it's not cold yet.
Not what I said. Not what I said. But I do expect that as a service, right? You know, sure, that, you know, EVE and Dust both will continue to progress on that front. So, you know, is there a world in which Dust is playable on some of these next generation platforms? Well, of course, that's very possible, and we're excited about those prospects, not just as people working at CCP, but as gamers as well, and seeing how the service progresses. But at the end of the day right now, we're utterly focused on making this PS3 version as good as we can. There's a lot of stuff coming in the next couple of months, and, you know, we will see what the future holds. But, you know, we're very excited about the prospects of being a free-to-play title on a platform that has 70 million units out there.
Sure.
This is not a bad place for us to be.
So now, like I was saying earlier, one foot in the PC cave, one foot here in the consoles. What, in general, did you take away from the PlayStation 4 conference? It gets revealed. I mean, did you see them moving away from Cell, them talking about, you know, a platform for developers by developers? Did that ring true to you, like looking at it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, this is stuff we get really excited about. I mean, and more than that, right, you know, a real commitment from Sony on the free-to-play model, right? You know, we're seeing that this is, you know, different platforms have handled this transition differently and have struggled at times with how to think about microtransaction-based models or how to think about the MMO as a service-based business because, you know, when you're running one of these platforms, there's a lot of cost on whether it's the Sony side, the Microsoft side, the Nintendo side of patching, of updates, of, you know, launchers and things that, you know, have a real cost and how to make sure as a platform owner you keep, you know, you pay for that and keep your business and your ecosystem profitable is a tough challenge. So, I like to think CCP's been part of that process with Sony, one of other, you know, several developers that have helped think about how to run live services on a console, how to do a free-to-play model, And it feels like PlayStation 4 is amplifying those efforts in a very good way. We've always known and been excited about the fact that Dust was a very early entree into the free-to-play model on the console, but we never imagined we'd be alone for long, right? You know, 2013 is going to be a big year of free-to-play titles on the console for sure.
All right, so again, talking, and these are all conversations swirling around the same kind of issue, so sure. I'm not doubling up, I swear to you, David Rubin. Looking at PlayStation 4, do you start to think about, as CCP, trying to make Eve come over there, because they are getting to this, it is running like a PC, right? It does have this PC-like infrastructure. And then also, piggybacking off of that, do you see a unified console, like, in our future? Is this the last generation of consoles, like Colin and I keep predicting? In our hats?
Yeah. All right, well, let's take the first one first, right? The you know, in a lot of ways, right, if you really boil down to what has made Eve successful and why has it thrived, you know, in a very different way, continuing to grow year after year when so many other games have not, we do think it's that fact about the sandbox allowing this emergent gameplay in the community where we're not telling them what to do. They are finding the ways to interact and socialize and go to war and be friends with each other. And the fact that it's single shard, right?
Be friends after go to war. Like,
that's how it usually goes. But that single shard sandbox is the backbone of what keeps Eve successful. At some level, the hardware that you use to enter that sandbox may be a little irrelevant over time, right? You know, it's a rendering device of the graphics. It's an input-output device of how I move around in that universe. It doesn't have to be a PC. But that said, right, you know, Eve on the PC is working really, really well. It's a game that lends itself to the two-foot interface of a mouse and keyboard, you know, a plethora of things to do and a lot of commands that you need to make. Those experiences don't translate as well to the console, and some of that experience that we've learned ourselves on that has been kind of chiseling a experience with that much customization and personalization for Eve, you know, an Eve universe for Dust onto a console. So, you know, there are no plans to think about Eve as a console title. What I do think we see, though, is, you know, again, with Dust now being the first, if you will, mega application in the Eve universe outside of Eve Online itself. Well, you know, we look at mobile and tablets the same way we look at consoles. There's lots of ways, lots of different business models, platforms, genres, moment-to-moment experiences that people can have that will allow them to get into that single shard sandbox on whatever platform they choose, whatever hardware piece they choose, whatever business model they choose, and tell their own stories in the universe without having to learn Eve on the PC, if you will. So, I think it's something where you know, we've learned in our first 10 years to never say never. Like, who knows what will happen? But right now, the plans are very focused that Eve remains strong, vibrant, and successful on the PC. Dust is the first of our entrees on different platforms, and it's for a different audience than the Eve audience. But in the end, they all jump into that mosh pit in New Eden together.
Ooh, mosh pit.
Nice.
Yeah, Colin likes that. Get a 311 mosh pit going.
Did that ever even happen?
Well, David Reed, we have to go do a live stream, which will be up on IGN by the time this airs, so everybody go download and watch this live stream and have fun with that. But thank you so much for joining us.
It's always a blast.
Is there anything you want to say to the PlayStation faithful listening before we say goodbye to them?
You know, I'll tell you what. Number one, you don't have to wait long for actual commercialization launch. We are coming up fast. Number two, we thank you for your participation, your feedback. Hopefully you have seen it as a gamer, but this game has changed dramatically over the past 2 years as we've gone through development and into closed beta. We're continuing to change it, and we think you're going to be really happy with the difference between open beta and launch. Can't tell you much about that yet, but there's a lot of good stuff coming there. And the last thing I'd say is, you know, we have not pulled every rabbit out of our hat here going into launch, going into Eve's second decade, its birthday on May 6th, going into FanFest in Reykjavik in April. There is a lot of activity going on right now, and watch this space.
All right.
Cool.
Go download Dust 514 right now. Give me a Beyond before you go.
Beyond!
You too.
Beyond!
There we go. Beyond!
Beyond.
Wow.
You learned something today.
That was really interesting. Yeah, I never would have expected to get that much info from a short.
I like that David Reed guy.
Yeah, I do too.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, he is.
True.
They're a fascinating company.
They are a fascinating company. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. Now, I'm getting a little concerned about Dust 514. But,
yeah. Why is that? Talk about it.
Because it wasn't on Michael Denny's list of PS3 games.
I know. Because I feel like it was supposed to be out last year, like a year ago, and they just aren't done with it yet. And with the PS4's backwards compatibility issues and stuff, it's just, is anyone going to give a shit about this game?
Yeah, you think the boat might be sailing?
Yeah, I think it would have been perfect last summer when there was a huge lull in games.
It's one of those things, it was interesting, it was so popular on IGN leading up to it. They had this huge, like, swell, and then they went into closed beta, and they kind of lost all this, it seemed like they got out of sorts on it, you know what I mean? They got out of sync when they were running.
Yeah, I think that they lost sight of the fact that the game, they just made a game that's too complicated, and I think that they had a...
Now,
scale it back.
See, I was talking about this. Yeah, they are scaling it back. They've said that. But, I mean, talking to people or talking to CCP on the live stream the other day with Damon, I asked them about that. You know, is it too complicated? And I think part of it is maybe they're going for a different audience, right? They're not going for the COD audience. They're not going for a Twitch shooter. They do want somebody who's going to come in and be like, okay, I get how I play into this geopolitical interstellar war.
I don't even mean that, though. Like, I think the interplay between Dust and Eve is fine because a lot of it's automatic. I mean more of like when you die, your weapon is gone.
Yeah.
Like, you have to buy 25 rifles, you know, of the same type. Like, there's weird shit in that game that I think is cool, but it's, you know, if you're trying to scale this game to make money,
yeah,
I don't know. It seems like more of a game you would charge $60 for than a game that you would charge microtransactions for.
I totally agree. I mean, it seems like it'll be a little bit overwhelming. I don't know. Like, the only time I've really seen, like, recent deep gameplay was with you, Greg, when we went to that event with Geddes, where he was driving.
The Orbital Strikes they were showing.
Yeah, and, it was all really interesting, but it did. Like, standing behind you, and granted, I feel like if I had my hand in the controller, it might be a little bit better, because I would be more intimately involved in what's going on. But, like, man, spectating that game, a little confusing.
It's confusing. It's hard to play, too. I'm bad at it. You know, I'm bad at that game. It's just...
That's nothing new for you. You suck at most games.
I know. I'm terrible. But I'm just, you know, that game is hardcore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be daunting for people to get into. I think it missed its window, but I hope that, you know, I think it's a cool idea. I respect CCP a lot.
Yeah.
You know, as they often like to say, as he said on the interview, you know, EVE Online grows every year. It's been out for 10 years. I mean, that's extraordinary. Considering most MMOs come out and burn, you know, and just die.
And that's what's so crazy. It's like Dust doesn't need to be crazily successful for CCP to be totally fine. Like, honestly, like, they probably will make enough money from EVE on the day Dust launches that they will have already broken even. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't... Like, I don't think it's a big risk for them or anything. I think it's a cool idea.
Their main studio is not making the game. So it's, you know, the guys in Shanghai are making the game, which is kind of an ancillary studio. The guys in, you know, Reykjavik, which is the capital of Iceland.
Oh, is it?
Or, you know, they work on EVE.
I thought it was Icelandia.
That would be Icelandia, Iceland. That would be a cool place to visit.
There's a town on Long Island called Islandia.
Oh.
I used to go to Funko Land there.
Yeah, Funko Land.
Funko Land.
They give you cash for your games.
Yeah, remember you used to get the newspaper from there, and they'd have all the prices, and you can kind of compare over a month. Like, games are getting rarer, you know, easier to find.
You have the stock market going. You were just
seeing. I used to love that shit, man.
It out on the wall.
I used to love walking into Funko Land. You'd have just the NES games and the SNES games just on huge walls behind the counter and stuff. It was good stuff.
The Babbages in my town had on one side they had all the games, and the other side they had all of, like, the really nerdy collectibles, like all the action figures and Donkey Kong plush toys and stuff. And those are all probably worth so much money now.
You went over there, you rolled around them.
Yeah, I just hugged them and I was like, are you my friend? And my mom had to pull me away.
No, Andy. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Podcast Beyond episode 283. We are IGN's PlayStation podcast. We are the number one PlayStation podcast on the internet for some reason.
No one knows.
Thank you for your support, as always. Please keep supporting us. The podcast is fun, but what keeps the lights on is, in fact, IGN.com. So go to IGN.com, watch some videos, read some articles. I don't know. Go to Colin's My IGN page. Just say something on his wall. It's whatever you want to do. It's a sandbox. It's a sandbox game. It's open-ended. You go do what you want on IGN.com. Check out YouTube. Follow us on Twitter. IGN is IGN. I'm Game Over Greggy. Colin is No Taxation.
Your boy.
Gofarb is Garfep. Garfep.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back next Tuesday with a new episode. Some shenanigans, I'm sure.
Mm.
It's time to introduce a new segment. Usually I say, Clements, take me home. As you know, Ryan Clement's no longer with us now. Deep Silver. A lot of people wrote in saying what they wanted the segment to be called. I asked on Twitter, we need a closing segment now. A lot of people had different things, like Roper Report obviously is named for Chris Roper. We've kept that forever. I want to open up to the real listeners, not just the people. You should be following me on Twitter, of course. You're a fool if you're not. You are missing so many pizza pictures and Portillo.
An awesome Vine starring me.
Awesome Vine starring Andrew Goldfarb. So follow me on Twitter. But then also, next week we'll name this segment. So you need to write into beyond@IGN.com. Tell me what this segment should be called.
Can I give my suggestion?
Sure, but I can't pick it.
I think it should be called Clements Take Me Home. I think we should just still say that at the end of every podcast.
Okay. So Clements Take Me Home. And then I just keep talking. I just keep talking.
Yeah, yes. It's like speaking to the spiritual segment. Ryan Clements.
What about like Clements Corner?
We text him at the end of every episode and say, okay, we're texting him right now. Clements, take me home. And he's like, I'm in a meeting.
Please leave me alone, guys. I'm making three times the money and I'm way more happy. anyways, we're going to play one of our favorites here. A Danny Weissner joint at Tuna News. He's the guy who did The World Is Saved.
Yep.
That song we ended Podcast Beyond 200 with. They were going to play his song that's been in my head all day, the two-player co-op song. Ooh, press start.
Good choice.
It's a great one. It's a great one. So we'll see you next week. Beyond.
Beyond. Beyond.
Less incentive towards the end of each campaign. But then you walked into the crosshairs of my sniper scope, and I knew then you were my lost hope. There's only so much I could say. My words get in the way. Only thing to do. Won't you be my is all just a game and I'ma play it cooperatively. So baby, won't you be my cover on the battleground? Us back to back when we're surrounded, we make quite the team. Oh yes we do. You and I could top the charts of every free for all. Could fight the fight that means the world survival. Hot and heavy until the end, because it's only me and you. So won't you be my player too? Cause I've got a game I really like to play. My power suit, cute like Pikachu. You are bomb like Hudson, jet set like Beat. You can choo-choo rocket like nobody else I've seen. You're my final fantasy, invincibility worth more than all the coins in the kingdom of me. Enjoy your morphine here than any Master Chief, even hotter than a pre-release PS3. You're my Chocobo, you're my Pikachu, my Daxter, my companion. You can take me higher than an airship over the blue. I wanna share this over a world with you.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times best-selling author of supernatural horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the spirit passage?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
I need you to save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be? The Sheriff, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.